Good afternoon and welcome to Lectionary at Lunch at Concordia Seminary. It is a beautiful, gray, cloudy day here in St. Louis, and we are looking at the lectionary readings for the Festival of the Reformation. And I will be going through Psalm 46 as the Old Testament reading here. Psalm 46, that's the psalm on which Martin Luther based his great hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. It is a psalm that focuses on the city of Jerusalem, Holy Zion. Sometimes it is associated with some of the other Zion psalms in the Psalter, Psalms 48, 76, and 87. It is a psalm that sometimes the psalms are described as a summary of the theology of the Old Testament. The book of Psalms is viewed as a summary of the whole theology of the Old Testament. And this psalm is a great example of that. There are important allusions to Genesis 1, the creation of the world, even stronger allusions to the Exodus deliverance in Exodus 14, and also close ties to the book of Isaiah, especially Isaiah chapter 2, where the Mount of Zion is lifted up above all the other mountains and the nations of the world stream. They nahar, they stream as a verb to Zion. And here in Psalm 46, we're going to see the peaceful stream that flows within Zion. But this idea of loftiness, the swelling pride of creation itself and the nations coming against God and His people, but ultimately the Lord being exalted, God being exalted amongst the nations and amongst the earth, the great theme of Isaiah 2. And then also Isaiah chapter 33, there are a lot of interconnections. We don't have time to trace all those out, although that would be fun, but I make reference to those in case you want to. If you're preaching on this passage, it would be fruitful to look at all of the interconnection between Genesis 1, Exodus 14, Isaiah 2, and Isaiah 33, and here in this psalm. Structurally, the psalm groups pretty nicely into three sections. Derek Kidner, in his little commentary on the Psalms, says that the first section, verses 2 to 4, proclaim God's ascendancy over nature. Verses 5 to 8, God's ascendancy over the attackers of His city. And the last four verses, verses 9 through 12, God's ascendancy over the whole warring world and all of its turmoil and battle. In terms of the preaching of the law in this psalm, the overarching theme is going to be that nothing can withstand God. And so the world, in all of its pride and pretension, stands under the judging word of God. We're going to hear how God lifts His voice and the whole earth shudders, melts, shakes. The mountains quake. Nothing is there to hold on to anymore. What will you cling to in that day? And this can be preached in terms of the eschatological warnings of God, that a day of judgment is coming on which everything will be shaken. Where will you stand? What will you cling to? But also, as the psalm alludes to, all of the struggles of this life, the warfare of the nations, security in this world, the times in life where everything is shaken and there's nothing to cling to. The gospel, then, is that we have a God who has brought us near to Himself in Christ and who has made Himself our refuge, even our refuge from His own wrath and His own judgments on this world. God is in Zion. He has a gracious presence. The God of Jacob does among His people. For us, that is in Holy Zion, the church. He's a refuge for all those who dwell there with Him by faith. He brings peace to all who have been made glad in His holy city. And though every kingdom will fall, the kingdom of God, His city, will stand firm forever. So let's take a look at the Hebrew text here then. Psalm 46, beginning with the superscription in verse 1. Lam natseach, livne korach, al alamot shir. Lam natseach is the preposition lamed, to or for the choir master. At least that's how it's usually translated, some kind of a musical term. For the choir master. The next lamed is generally viewed as a lamed of authorship by the sons of Korach. The sons of Korah were Levitical singers, probably, at the time of temple worship. And so Here there must have been a famous group of them that authored psalms. So authored by the sons of Korah. Then Al-Alamot, Alma in Hebrew is the noun that means a young woman. It's famous because of its use in the prophecy of the birth of Emmanuel in Isaiah 7. Here it's plural, and it has the preposition all in front of it. So very literally it says something like, according to young women. It's plural. According to young women. And it's thought that maybe this is another musical notation, meaning it's sung in a high pitch or something like that. People make different guesses about exactly what that means. I suppose it's possible also that this is actually the name of a melody. Sometimes this construction, all plus something at the beginning of Psalms, refers to a specific tune that it was to be sung to. Maybe they had a song called Young Women. Be that as it may, those are the possibilities. And the last noun there is just shir, a song, telling us what follows. It is a shir, a song. Verse 2. Elohim lanu makaseh v'oz. God, belonging to us, in other words, our God, or God is for us, a makaseh and oz, a refuge and a strength or protection. Oz can either mean strength, he is our strength, or it can have more of an abstracted sense of protection or defense. So God is for us a refuge and a protection. Ezra basarot nimsa ma'od. Ezra is the noun help, something that is a help. So continuing to describe Elohim, God, he is a help. B-sarot. Tsara is the word that means distress. Tsara with a tsade means distress. Here it is plural, so with the bait on the front, probably indicating time in times of distress. He is a help in times of distress. And now nimsa ma'od. Nimsa is the nifal participle of matzah. Matzah means to find, so literally it means being found. Being found, and then ma'od, the adverb meaning very much. So he is very much being found in times of trouble. And this is rendered in different ways in English. Sometimes an ever-present help in trouble is probably the way that it rings in most of our minds. But the idea is access to God. He's accessible, he's discoverable in times of distress. This is presence language. He is near to his people and found by them in those times, which is why he is a fortress and a defense. Verse 3. Al-Kain, together, means therefore. So, Al-Kain lo nirah bahamir aretz. Therefore, we will not yare, we will not fear. And now another temporal bait with the hithil infinitive construct of more, which means to change or to shake or shudder. It can mean either one of those things. And the subject there is aretz. When the earth changes or when the earth shakes, either one of those things is pretty disconcerting. In other words, you think of the earth as the thing that's stable and unchangeable, the ground beneath your feet. When it starts to all of a sudden alter, or when it begins to shake, it's a terrifying prospect. But because God is our refuge and our defense and our help in times like that, we will not fear, the psalmist says, when the earth shakes. Uvamot harim belev yamim. Or when the mountains, harim, mot. Mot means to die with a tav on the end, but with a tate on the end, the other T, it means it's really a synonym of mur, to shake or to totter or topple. So, or when the mountains topple or totter, belev yamim, in the heart of the seas. In the heart of the seas. Now, is this referring to mountains shaking so much that they actually fall into the seas, into the heart of the seas? Or is it talking about the mountains that exist arising up out of the heart of the seas, and even those mountains, the ones that the world is kind of founded on and rests on, they are shaking and toppling. Well, it could be read either way. Most English translations actually take it as the mountains falling into the sea, but it also could be kind of a picture of, in other words, the whole structures of the land of the earth that arise up out of the sea, shaking. But lev yamim, in the heart of the sea. Verse 4 is the final verse in the first section. It completes this imagery of unsettledness. And listen to the sound play in the first couple of words here. Yekamu yekmaru meimav. The first verb is from hama, which means to roar. It's a sound verb, to roar. And the second verb, kamar, means to foam. So, and the subject is its waters. The verbs are imperfect, so now all of a sudden we've talked about not fearing in the time when the earth shakes and the mountains topple. Now we look forward a little bit hypothetically. When, or though, or simply they will, the waters will roar and foam. And notice the pronoun subject on waters there, meimav, its waters. That's referring back to the yamim, the seas. And there's not an agreement in number there, but it's really the only thing in the context that it could be referring to. So it's taking yamim as a single unit, the seas. Its waters, the waters of the seas, will roar and foam. Yirashu harim ba'ga'a vato. And the mountains, they will shake, another word for shaking here, they will shake at its swelling. And again, referring to the seas. The sea is swelling up. This is actually a word that can mean pride or loftiness. But here, literally, it's talking about the swelling of the waters. But here are the tones of pride there, the pride of the whole creation arising against God's people and against God. And yet, what's going to happen in the midst of that? Then we have our little selah, our pause. Verse 5 introduces a new section. The first word is river there, nahar. And notice the way that the whole tone now changes in the psalm. Everything has been about shaking and shuddering and toppling. The whole creation is in unrest, and all of a sudden you come to verse 5 and the whole emotion and tone of the psalm changes. Suddenly there's water again, but it's a completely different picture. Verse 5. Nahar polagav yismaku ir Elohim. A river. Its streams, polagav is its streams, referring to the river's streams. Its streams make glad, the PL imperfect of samach, to rejoice. In the PL, it means to cause to rejoice, to make glad. Its streams cause to rejoice ir Elohim, the city of God. So we've had all this water imagery of judgment and fear and destruction, and now all of a sudden there is this one river that brings joy. And where is it? It's bringing joy in the ir Elohim, the city of God. Kadosh Mishkane Elyon, a holy place of the dwellings of Elyon. Kadosh is an adjective. Kadosh, here it's in construct, so it's clear that it's being used as a substantive adjective. It can refer to God himself, the Kadosh Yisrael, the Holy One of Israel. But here, rather than Holy One, Kadosh as a substantive prior refers to a holy place. Linked here with the Mishkan of God, the dwelling place of God. Notice that Mishkane there is plural. The holy place of the dwellings of Elyon. Why would it refer to the dwelling places of God when you're talking specifically about Jerusalem and the temple there, Mount Zion, which is very singular? It is the dwelling place of God. The Psalms sometimes refer to God's dwelling place in Zion in the plural, and it's probably not a plural of actual number or countability, but rather a plural of majesty or intensity. So we might translate it the glorious dwelling place. So look at the way that the imagery, the nuance is being piled up in these last three words of verse 5. The holy place of the glorious dwelling place of the Most High God, Elyon. It's this huge piling up of adjectival nuance. And all of that is in apposition to or further describing the Ir Elohim, the city of God. What's so great about this city? Why is it so glorious and holy? Why is the river there bringing joy? Verse 6, Elohim Bekir Ba Baal Timot. God is in her midst. And just a simple phrase there, but the whole psalm in a sense turns on this notion. God is in her midst. Therefore, Baal Timot. She will not moat. She will not topple. We've had this verb already. This is what was happening to the mountains as everything is falling apart. The mountains are toppling in the heart of the sea. But this city, this place, will not topple because God is in her. Yatzare'ah Elohim lefanot boker. God will help her. Notice the eha suffix on that first verb from atzar, to help. God will help her lefanot boker. Lefanot here is the infinitive construct of the verb pana. When you see lifna something, you kind of start to think lifne, the preposition before. But here it's not from it's not rooted in the noun panim at the face of, but rather the verb pana, to turn. And those third hey verbs in the infinitive construct get that unusual ot ending. So at the time of the turning of the morning, in other words, when the dawn comes, God will be her help. This is a familiar theme in the Psalms. The people of God go through dark times, but they are to wait and wait, and morning always comes for God's people. He shows himself to be their help. Lefanot boker, at the turning of the morning. That phrase also is rooted in the Exodus. Exodus 14:27 uses that same language. It's at that time, at the turning of the morning, that God routs the chariots of Egypt. All of a sudden, at the turning of the morning, the waters go back into the sea. That's the only other place in the Old Testament that phrase is used. Verse 7, Hamu goyim matu mamlakot. There's some sound play going on among the verbs here again. We have hama again, which meant to roar. Now it's not the seas that are roaring, but nations. Nations roar, kingdoms. Here is mote again. Kingdoms topple. So before we had mountains toppling, now the kingdoms are toppling. The only thing that's not toppling is the city of God. Nations roar, kingdoms topple. Natan bakolo tamug aretz. He has sent forth, or he has given with his voice. In other words, he's uttered his voice. He's set forth his word. The earth melts. Tamug. Verb moog there, the hollow root, can also mean to reel or to waver. So there's this instability language again. The earth itself melts or reels. And now a refrain in verse 8. Yahweh Tzavaot Imanu. Yahweh of hosts is with us. Misgav Lanu Elohe Yaakov. A refuge for us is the God of Jacob. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And then pause, Selah. Verse 9 introduces the final section with a focus on the warfare of the nations. And it begins with an imperative. This is a first-person plural psalm so far. It's been speaking in the we voice. And the singers are the people of God themselves now. They call out to one another and to all with these plural imperatives. Laku katsu. Come and see. Come and behold. Katsa means to see, especially with the nuance of prophetic seeing. So come and behold not only what you can see with your eyes, but come and behold what is coming. What God has promised that we can anticipate. And what is that? Mif'alot Yahweh, the works of Yahweh, asher sam shamot ba'aretz. The works of Yahweh, and now asher here can either function as a relative pronoun describing God, come and see the works of God who has set Shamot in the earth. Or it could function as kind of a synonym of the conjunction ki. In later Hebrew, asher and ki become sort of interchangeable. And so it could further describe the object of the imperative see. Come and see the works of Yahweh. Come and see that which He has set in the earth. It's probably best to take it, though, because we have this object, Shamot, there, as a relative pronoun modifying Yahweh. So come and see the works of Yahweh, who, Psalm, from the verb seem, who has set Shamot in the earth. Shamot means destructions or desolations or things that cause amazement or wonder. So He's done things that lay things bare and cause people's jaws to drop, in other words. Come and look at what He's done, and now it's going to describe this great work that God does in the earth among the nations. Keshet Yishaber, the bow He breaks, V'kitzeitz Kanit. And He katsatzes, this is a noun or a verb that means to cut off. It's a in the PL, to cut into or to cut in pieces, spear. So the bow He breaks, the spear He cuts in pieces, agalot yisrof ba'esh, and the something plural, the agalot, He burns, saraf, with fire. Agalot in most English versions is translated as shields. Shields in the ancient world weren't usually made out of metal. They were usually some kind of leather and other materials that were wrapped and then bonded with some kind of a tar, and so they were very flammable. You could actually burn them. It's possible that this means shields. Some scholars amend it slightly to read that way, but it's actually, as it's pointed by the Masoretes here, it actually refers to carts. And so you would have to read it as some kind of military cart, war chariots or war carts, it sometimes is translated. But it never occurs in the Old Testament in a military context. It's always other kinds of carts. So there's some dispute as to how that should be taken. Doesn't really matter. The sense is pretty clear. God is getting rid of all the weapons of warfare. You have shades of Isaiah 2 here. Karpu udu ki anoki Elohim. Be still and know, plural imperatives, that I am God. Arum ba'goyim, arum ba'aretz. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. And verse 12, Yahweh Tzavaot Imanu, Yahweh Apos is with us. Misgav lanu Elohei Yaakov. A refuge belonging to us is the God of Jacob. The God of Jacob is our refuge. This last word for refuge that we see in verse 12 and also in the refrain in verse 8 is a little different from the word for refuge in verse 2. It has a specific sense of height, so a place up high in the rocks that can't be touched. And it's interesting that you begin with a generic word for refuge, then you have everything in the world shaking and even falling into the sea, and the later words for refuge are this high up perch, this idea that it's only Jerusalem, it's only the city of God that hasn't been shaken and that remains in the day of destruction. Well, I've already commented on some of the generalities of the psalm and some ideas for preaching, and we're out of time for the Old Testament, pretty much, so we'll move on to Dr. Shuckard and the Gospel.
Thank you.